You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
November the 22nd, 2022, 59 years since the assassination of JFK. We're going to talk about that more later in this hour. Thank you for joining us, reminding you we are live streaming on Rumble.com right now. You can go to Rumble.com in the search engine, enter Larry Connors, USA. It'll take you right to our studio. Welcome. I salute you. I thank you. Spread the word. If you can't do it now, watch it later at your pleasure. And subscribe, we'll just send it to you. Same thing with podcasts of each program. And then in turn, share them with others, saying you got to see and listen and watch Larry Connors USA. I do appreciate it. So South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham is appearing before a Georgia grand jury investigating efforts to overturn the 2020 election. The prosecutors in Fulton County, of course, focusing on whatever Donald Trump and his allies did to, in their opinion, subvert the results of the 2020 election in Georgia. So they want to question Graham about calls he made to Georgia officials. I've been watching. He is appearing and is scheduled to, and I think he may be in the process, but I haven't seen anything come out yet officially. He arrived at the courthouse around 9 o'clock Central Time this morning, but I haven't seen any reports on what he is saying and what he's testifying to or not. There may be a lot of arguing between the attorneys back and forth before he gets around to testifying or answering questions. In the meantime, Arizona Assistant Attorney General Jennifer Wright, of course, continues to demand that Maricopa County officials produce an accounting of all those ballots stuffed into duffel bags during the ballot tabulation process November 8th. She is part of the state's Elections Integrity Unit, and she said, we want to know about all those ballots in the black duffel bags and those that suddenly got dropped into door number 3, where they just kind of disappeared, apparently. No, they're still recounting and trying to. It appears that Carrie Lake will not win the governorship of Arizona, and, of course, it was hoped that she would, and then her coattails would carry a Republican senator into office. That didn't happen either way, it looks like. By the way, this is something you might have missed along the way, and it's understandable because they don't get a lot of attention, and they should. They just like any farmer, they're hardworking. But they have an organization called the National Black Farmers, you know, because they talk about not just things that are different between white and Asian farmers or anything else, but what they have in common and then history. But the association president stated, President Joe Biden and the Ag Secretary have not done enough to help American farmers. He didn't say black American farmers. To help American farmers, and they failed to act on China buying up American farmland. He's speaking for all farmers. Good point. Oh, and speaking of how things are going on the farm and cost of everything, a recent Washington Post essay got some backlash right away because it began to talk about things that are affected by climate impact. Here it comes. One of the items affected by climate impact would be your Thanksgiving food, your turkey, your other things. And she wrote in her column, I know nobody wants to put climate and Thanksgiving in the same sentence, but she did. And she said, we just need to make it a more climate-friendly holiday. You know, other than using typical Thanksgiving dishes, turkey and things like that, they would help the climate. All right, then go chew on a rock. Massachusetts taxpayer is being asked to foot a $139 million bill that would expand emergency shelter capacity in Massachusetts. This is for illegals arriving in the state. They're finally getting the idea, yeah, we'll have to pay for it. the border states, Texas, Arizona, they've all been paying for it. Now we're going to have to, you bet. And then ICE is revealing that they just arrested 140 convicted illegal sex offenders still in this country. These guys are convicted, still roaming our country, maybe near your school, your child. Put that against what's happening at the World Cup in Qatar. Al-Qaeda and the regional affiliate Al-Qaeda in that Arabian Peninsula are upset because this World Cup is attracting immoral people, homosexuals, and over there, they're not just going to arrest you. Literally, off with your head.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with the Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Larry Connors USA.
So I think that DeSantis, Boebert, they have blood on their hands on this. They have to stop spreading lies. These are lies that they're spreading, and they're causing pain and death and murder against our community, in addition to insufficient gun safety in this country. Couple that all together and you have what happened on Saturday night. So you can see whether or not the motive on Saturday night turns out to be hate, which it looks like it's pointing that way. It's still an environment and a culture that we're living in and that politicians are leading. They're leading this hate. So we need them to stop.
I don't think she named any Democrats in who's leading hate in the country, did she? I don't think so. No, she didn't. But there was the CEO of GLAAD, Gay Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which I'm all about. I don't believe in defaming anyone. And especially at a particular group, you know. But here is this CEO of this group, Sarah Kate Ellis, on NBC saying, you know who's responsible for what happened in that shooting in that gay nightclub the other night in Colorado? That'd be, first of all, the Colorado Congressman Boebert, because she is, you know, she's a gun toter too. And Ron DeSantis is all, well, I mean, she did throw in Trump's name. I don't know how she got around not mentioning that, but she went for DeSantis because of the so-called Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, which is that's not what it was at any point. But, of course, it became a quick slogan for the left to use, and no one would question it. Not on their side. We do all the time and point it out. But breaking down some of the other things you're saying, stop spreading lies. Did she give you any piece of direct evidence that saying they that proves they had blood on their hands? No. Would that make her a liar? Would it make her just uninformed? Would it make her stupid? There's no evidence whatsoever in that statement or anything else that she was saying that day on NBC. I'll come back to her in a minute, but I want to switch to another person making similar type remarks. This one is from MSNBC, their national security analyst, Frank Figluese, I think is the name. And he's saying, you know, what we have going on in this country right now is a lot of hate crime.
We need to see accountability and consequences. So first, a real quick hate crime charge here on top of the homicide charges. I applaud that. That tells me prosecutors and police, they found quickly what they needed. That means they know this was a bias crime. This is likely, and since we've heard reports that the subject isn't cooperating with police, that means they likely found clear and convincing evidence on his devices.
Ah, now let's stop it right there. The police had not officially declared the true motive. But here you have a national security analyst quickly saying, well, that right there, that tells me that's got to be a hate crime. And he points out that they found, obviously, some evidence on some of his devices. That would mean computer, things he's logging into, his cell phone, things of that nature, or things he's watching on TV or via YouTube, whatever. Just going to make a judgment strictly based on that. First of all, the guy that went in and did the shooting, yes, he should be held accountable. And I don't care what the motive was. He should pay with his own life. I will push the death penalty every day on this. But what I have a problem with is these left-wingers rushing in and quickly blaming it on everyone except maybe some of their own language and some of their own tactics and antics that basically encourage others to lose their cool. It is true that some of the last reports show when you break down why there were attacks, 62% were considered to be, quote, I guess that's not going to work, despite what he said, racial. Now, that may or may not be hate, but they're not calling it a hate crime. 20%, they are clearly classifying as hate crime. 13%, religious objections, which I guess would also be hate crime. I don't even know how they compile these things now. You've always heard the saying that the figures don't lie, but the figures do lie. But here's this national security analyst saying that they looked into this guy's devices that carried out the shooting in the nightclub, and they found something. And he's got something specific, he says, probably was located, and here's someone else to blame for the shooting.
Since we've heard reports that the subject isn't cooperating with police, that means they likely found clear and convincing evidence on his devices. If he's a consumer of the people we just rattled off, from Lauren Boebert to Tucker Carlson, let's get it out. Let's get it out at trial. Let's expose it for what it is, name it and shame it. He's a consumer of these people, and those people should face civil consequences from the victim.
Name it and shame it. Okay. But because he watched Tucker Carlson or he listened to something DeSantis said or even Trump said, who knows what set someone off like that? This guy has a history anyway. He shouldn't have had the guns. There'd been some issues with him previously, yet he was allowed to buy them. Now, that you want more gun laws? How about you enforce the gun laws we have? But again, it's just smear everybody. Throw Tucker Carlson in there. I couldn't believe that, and yet at the same time, I'm not at all surprised. So, in addition to his attacks in that sense and trying to blame it on hate talk, I guess is what he's trying to say, that Tucker Carlson and some of those other media out there are having filled with hate talk. If you think this is a hate talk program, you're wrong. This is really, I'm trying to bring us closer together. But you can't do it until you point out the divisiveness that exists, and then we can wipe out the divisiveness. I've told you before, I don't really care if your political stripes are opposite of mine. I got a sister that probably sides more with you on politics than I would. But I'm not losing a relationship with my sister or anyone else over politics. And I'm certainly not going to hate someone. I'm certainly not going to be so upset I'm going to go shoot someone. And most everyone out there, if not everyone listening, has the same attitude. But those on the left, unfortunately, they think it's okay. They can call you out and claim that you would. You would do that, wouldn't you? No. But here comes again the CEO of GLAAD, Sarah Kate Ellis, saying, you know, there are a couple things that are driving this hate, and it's coming from politicians.
I think it's driven by two things primarily. One is the rhetoric that's coming out from politicians. They're using our community as political footballs, and they're spreading lies and hate about our community. Just this past year alone, there have been over 300 anti-LGBTQ bills proposed, 300 against a community that's not looking for anything.
Now, wait a minute. They are looking for something. They're wanting to be able to teach transgender nomenclature, actions, and others related information to K through third grade. Yeah, they do want something. And it's not appropriate. You get to the ninth through the 12th grade, then maybe we can have a different discussion. Now, not really in favor of it there, but I will certainly agree, let's have a more detailed discussion at that point. But the young ages, they do want something. Don't let her sell you, and they don't want anything. No, they do want something. That's why you're seeing all these bills pop up and within school districts and some states and some counties. So once again, she said, it's driven by two things, primarily the rhetoric from politicians. Not their rhetoric, of course. They're never going to blame themselves. And look at all those bills. And she continues.
Couple that with social media platforms that are monetizing hate, that are monetizing lies. They're making money off of spreading hate, and they're not stopping, and they have the tools to stop it. So it's incredibly frustrating to see something like Saturday night happen when you know what's driving it. Whatever the motive comes out to be, we know that there is an increase in this culture of hate and rhetoric around our community that is resulting in real-world harm. And even a report that we're about to release shows that in the past year, there have been either 100 violent attacks or threats of violence against drag events across this country. In this country.
She makes it sound like in this country that should never happen. And I do agree we should not have that. But we shouldn't have threats against people because they go to a different church or they're a different color or because they happen to have money or because they are for protecting unborn children or they're for aborting children. I read in the end of News and Commentary about how they're really upset in Qatar where they're holding the World Cup. And she's talking about how this country, look at what we're doing in this country. Let me go back and recapsulate some of that from the News and Commentary to tell you and her these threats are wrong, yes. And they should be pursued, yes. Same thing as the threats and attacks upon fertility clinics and pro-life groups. But in Qatar, Al-Qaeda and its regional affiliate in Qatar published messages condemning the World Cup being held there, accusing that Islamist nation of attracting, quote, immoral people, homosexuals, sowers of corruption and atheism to the Middle East. They don't just talk about hate there. They carry out and they do execute. If you're homosexual, they take them to the tallest building they can, throw them off, and they're still alive. They'll stone them when they get to the ground. Or they'll chop off their head. Neither of those are acceptable. But when I hear someone like her go on and on, you think that we are the most horrific nation in the world. We're not. We're not perfect. But we pale in comparison to what I just read. There's another part of the story out of the Colorado nightclub shooting that happened that I want to share with you some in this segment, and we'll conclude it in the next segment. In the nightclub, even though it was considered, quote, a gay nightclub, there were a lot of people that were not gay. They were either had gay friends or they just went there for entertainment, maybe to watch the drag show or just have fun. Among them was a retired Army major. And here's how he described what he saw happen.
At that point, I saw the shooter. I had no idea what was going on, but apparently I saw him going to the patio area because I saw a lot of people in the window. Or it may not even have been a window left, but I saw a lot of people, and this guy was there, and I saw the ACU pattern flak vest. And for me, that was like, there's a handle. I'm getting it. So I ran across the room, grabbed the handle, pulled him down, and then started to, I think I went for his gun with him. His rifle flew in front of him. And the young man that tried to jump in there with me, we both either pulled him down or whatever, but he ended up at his head, and right next to the AR. And then with the AR, I told him, push the AR, get the AR away from him. The kid pushed the AR. I don't know what his name was. And then I proceeded to take his other weapon, the pistol, and then just start hitting him where I could, but the armor's in the way. And I found a crease in between his armor and his head, and I just started wailing away with his gun.
Yeah, I took his pistol and started beating in the back of his neck where the armor was not protecting him. That's Richard Fierro. I want you to hear more of his story and what happened that night when we continue.
USA.
I was in mode. I was doing what I did. I do downrange, you know. I trained for this. I don't want to ever do this. I didn't even retire because I was done doing this stuff. It was too much, and it came in handy, and I got to protect my kid. I lost my kid's boyfriend. I tried. I tried to have everybody in there. I still feel bad that there's five people. There's five people that didn't come home. And this guy, I told him while I was hitting him, I said, I'm going to kill you, man, because you tried to kill my friends. My family was in there.
Very tough to hear, but understandable. That is a Richard Fierro, former Army major, who was at the Colorado nightclub the other night when the gunman came in and started opening fire. You heard in the previous segment how once he realized what was going on, he saw the guy had an armored vest. He said, there's a handle because you can get hold of the vest in a way to hold him. He said, so I went for that and then got the rifle away from him, the AR-15, I think it was. And then I took the pistol he had with him and started beating him in the back of his neck where the armor didn't protect him between his neck and his head. And another guy came over and started kicking away at him. And he said, I just went into survival mode. It just took me back to being downrange, as they call it, in a war zone. You know, that's not what they went in for that night. None of them did. They went in to party, and it was a gay nightclub, but not everyone in there was gay. They were all just friends and having a good time. It doesn't make a difference if they were gay, white, black, yellow, red, yellow. None of that matters. A guy coming in with a gun and shooting at them, yes, that's an issue. But before everyone jumps forward and says, say there's another reason for gun control, he should never have been able to buy the guns based on some prior incidents, including threatening to blow up his house with his mom in it, and then also in a standoff with police. And then he also, according to a neighbor, said, you know, you don't have to worry about the guns. It's the people who have the guns you need to worry about. And that is a point that is certainly correct. But Richard Fierro said, you know, I was in the military, but at the same time, I thought I'd served my time, and the stuff I saw, I was ready to get out. And then suddenly I'm back in a war zone.
I was proud to be a soldier. I don't like these guys running around here doing G.I. Joe stuff, and they're not. I'm not a G.I. Joe. I'm just a normal guy, man. I'm protecting my family, and I reached up and I did what I had to do. And honestly, I don't care about myself in that moment. I cared about everybody that was around me, and I cared especially about my family. Mm-hmm. As soon as I got done with that guy and the cop came in, I went across the room and started first aid with my friend who was shot in the chest and the legs and the arms. And I told her, Joanne, stay with me. Look me in the eye. Stay with me. And I moved her head so she wouldn't see her arm because he was shot. And Chip was right there. Her husband was reaching for her. So I put her hand in his hand so that they could be together. I didn't know if they were going to make it.
I don't know if they did make it or not, but at that point he said, you know, they're trying to reach for each other, and I just helped them hold hands. It's a heroic story of what he did and the others who joined him. 5 were killed, 20-plus injured. Don't know the full extent of those injuries. Fatality rate could go up, but if they had not moved and acted when they did, there is no doubt it could have been worse. It's a story that broke earlier. I didn't make time to put it in because I had other things I wanted to get to and didn't want to interrupt the flow of the program. But the Supreme Court, I know the left is going to love to hear this, the Supreme Court has cleared the way for the IRS to release former President Trump's tax returns to a Democrat-led House committee. It's a major loss, according to CNN, as they say, a major loss for Trump, who's fought to keep them under protection. But there were no noted dissents among the Supreme Court, apparently. So they're going to go to the House Ways and Means Committee chairman, a Massachusetts Democrat who first wanted them back in 2019. Which brings me to my next guest that's coming up. How much damage can this lame duck Congress do in its closing days? Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Some car dealers might try to take advantage of you. One quick way to spot it, look at the sticker price. Jay Ackerman told me, especially in these times, he wants to reward the generations of buyers and the new customers. So Ackerman Toyota sells every car at sticker price. No markup. What you see is what you pay. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
It was 1989. My thoughts were short. My hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Reminding you, we are live streaming as I speak at rumble.com. Go to rumble.com, enter in Larry Connors USA. That'll take you right to our page. You're in studio with us. Glad to have you. My guest, E.J. Antoni with the Heritage Foundation, an expert on financial and monetary issues. Now, often quoted and writing also for various places like Fox News, Wall Street Journal, National Review, so forth and so on, a long, long list. E.J., glad to have you on board, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to look at a couple things. One, I know you just did a piece talking about how bad we are going to have with, or how things are going to be going forward with the economy and where it is. And in a thumbnail sketch, where would you say we are as far as, quote, the transitionary inflation?
You know, unfortunately, if you can imagine a roller coaster, right, and maybe we hit the peak of that roller coaster sometime over the summer, and then we're on our way back down, you know, we are basically in that trough, and we're probably soon going to be heading back up to another peak, especially as we get into the winter and we face energy shortages for things like diesel fuel.
Yeah, and you point out in a piece I've got here in front of me, I think this is originally you and a colleague published. This is Newsday, and you pointed out a Washington Post article, because they're always trying to spin it the other way. 7 ways a recession could be good for you financially. What a laugh. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, if this is not the classic case of, what is it, Stockholm syndrome, right, where a prisoner begins to not only identify with but be grateful to the person imprisoning them. I mean, it's absolute nonsense, right? This is as Orwellian as it gets. You will be in pain and you will like it is essentially the financial message coming from this administration and its sycophants in the media. It's disgraceful.
Well, one of the things they point out, saying housing prices might finally come down to some reasonable levels. Yay, nay.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And you know what? Now we have all these people who took out these jumbo-sized mortgages to try to buy homes, right, to try to get their piece of the American dream. And now we're risking another housing crisis where housing prices could collapse. They've already started trending down. They likely will continue on that trend. And people are going to be underwater on their mortgages again. I mean, it could get so bad. People will be so underwater on their mortgages, it'll feel like Ted Kennedy drove them home.
Oh, my God. Chappaquiddick reminder. And then, of course, they point out savings rates are up. Where'd they come up with that?
Oh, my goodness. I literally have scoured all kinds of databases, including official government data, trying to find any indication of that datum point. But there is literally none. In fact, if you want to look at monthly savings, that's how much families and people like you and I actually have left over at the end of the month to save, what our income minus our spending, right? That figure has collapsed. It is down 80% since Biden took office. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how much people are being stretched here. 6 ways to Sunday.
Now, with all this in mind, then we did not see, as everybody was expecting, based on just these points if we raised, the so-called red wave tsunami, because the inflation, the cost of goods on the table, even a higher height survey which focused on black women, their main concern was not abortion, but putting food on the table. And yet abortion, the Roe v. Wade decision, apparently generated more action and backlash than expected. And I had to admit that I didn't think it'd be that big of a deal this far past it. But it certainly seems to have been the one rally cry that did hold up.
Well, I think it was more so that we overestimated what kind of role inflation would play. And now, okay, how do we square this circle? Because in polls both before the election and in exit polling, we saw that inflation was the number one issue. So how could it be the number one issue and not actually change that many people's minds? Who is inflation affecting the worst? It is affecting the worst people who were probably going to vote Republican anyway. Think about people like retirees who are on a fixed income. You know, prices under Biden are up 14%. If you're on a fixed income, you don't get a cost of living adjustment, most likely. And so you're just stuck, and you are about 3 times worse off than the average worker in terms of your loss.
And if you're below average, you're certainly not any better off.
Right, right. Now, conversely, what about a group like college grads who disproportionately votes Democrats? Retirees, older people disproportionately vote Republican, but young college grads disproportionately vote Democrat. They are more likely to live at home with their parents. They're shielded from health insurance costs because they're on their parents' health insurance. They're not seeing those price increases, the price increases for food, for housing, right? And this is a group that disproportionately votes Democrat. It's also a group whose income is the only demographic which has actually kept up with inflation. And so a group that was probably going to vote Democrat and could have had its minds changed wasn't actually affected that much by inflation.
You bring up something I was going to put in front of you anyway. This is a column by Samuel Abrams, L.A. Times, talking about Gen Z, calling the Gen Z voters are credited with halting the predicted red wave, young voters turning out en masse for Democrats. Exit polls from CNN showing 63% of Gen Zs voted for Democrats, higher percentage than for older generations, exactly copying what you said. But basically, it ended up saying that these were basically less than a quarter of them were students believing the Democrat Party is acting in the best interest. Only 25% feel the same about the GOP. And as you said, they look at all these things and they don't really have They don't have any fortune. They don't have any home. They don't have anything, and they have bills. But if you're going to get a loan forgiveness every time, or you're going to get a check in the mail, why do you care?
No, that's exactly right. I'm so glad you brought up that student loan forgiveness, which now, thank goodness, it looks like our court system is going to declare unconstitutional. But that is just one of many examples where this administration basically pulled political maneuvers to try to gain some political capital before the election. And now that the election is gone, most of that is not going to materialize. Look at what they tried to do in the oil market with their shady secret deal with Saudi Arabia, where they wanted the Saudis not to cut production, right, not at all, but just until after the election,
because they
didn't want to worry about higher prices before that. Look at what they did with the railroad unions, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't a matter of trying to avert a railroad strike. It was a matter of just pushing the strike off until after the elections.
Well, this same article,
we may have that strike.
This same article points out that voters in this new generation are dedicated. It does not mean that they are dedicated Democrats. In fact, they might be better described as pragmatist and issue-oriented voters. One issue, and that's my deciding vote, which apparently that's where Roe v. Wade came in. Before we go too much deeper, though, I do want your thoughts on, we have a lame duck Congress. Until the new House is seated, sworn in, how much more damage can this current Congress, since they have the House and Senate, do before they have to abandon office?
Oh my goodness, they have almost $500 billion that they're going to try to force through. They want $150 billion massive omnibus. They want to send another $48 billion of unaccounted money to Ukraine, for crying out loud. They want another $30 billion for a disaster supplemental, and now they want to waive what we call the statutory paygo of $130 billion. And the paygo just basically means that as Congress spends money, they need to have a way of paying for it. In other words, you don't get to spend a dollar unless you're going to find a dollar of savings or a dollar of new taxes somewhere. And they want to get rid of all of that and just keep borrowing and spending us into oblivion.
You know, I was bringing up similar points, even if there were to be a red wave tsunami. It's before the election. I say, keep in mind, even if that happens, they are in power until January, when the oath of office is taken by new members. So a lot of damage could still happen. And I'm listening to you go through that litany of numbers. That's scary.
Oh, no, it certainly is. And the thing that truly makes it scary is the fact that we have so many so-called conservatives in Congress, especially in the Senate, where we have, we have more than 40 members, which means that we can stop a filibuster. But so many of these so-called conservatives just don't have a spine.
Yes.
And so they go along with all of these spending boondoggles.
Do you that leads me to the last question for our last minute here. Do you see any way that they won't get what they want? I mean, they could still push to codify Roe v. Wade or anything else at this point, right? What is one stopgap that might stop them from achieving everything they want before January?
Hopes and prayers.
Okay. I'm into both of those. Listen, I want to thank you very much, EJ, for your time, and a blessed Thanksgiving for you and your family, sir.
Oh, thank you so much. Same to you, and thank you for having me.
You bet. A.J. Antoni with Heritage Foundation. Yep. Hopes and a lot of prayers, I might add. Coming up, do you remember where you were on this day 59 years ago? 59 years ago. Some of you may not have been born, obviously. And those who were, they probably are thinking, what happened? Oh, I know what it is, Larry. I know what it is. I do know where I was. That story coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So I'm sure many of you have figured out what happened 59 years ago, and then of course, do you remember where you were? We're talking about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, J.F. Kennedy, and of course, there have generations, couple born since that time, that don't really know much about the story, if at all. And there may be many Democrats who don't really know who JFK is because he would not be considered a Democrat by some of their standards nowadays. But do you remember what you were doing and where you were? I do. I was still in high school. I know that kind of gives away some of my age, but let it be. And there was an announcement that came on the speaker, and basically classes were being dismissed early. Might have been probably 2 hours before the end of the day or something like that. I don't recall the time as to when we were being notified that. And then you quickly found out what had happened. At the time, I was already, as a high school student, I was doing some work at a local radio station. You know, basically interning, but anything they let me do, you know, just to be around broadcasting. So I went over there right away and seen what I could do to, you know, add and cover the story and what I could do. Well, they weren't really able to do much either because they were having to rely on the network to provide them information and the wire service. Every once in a while, they would do a cut in and add something with one of their local announcers. But I kind of felt inadequate, not able to do anything. And, of course, at the same time, in shock, as was the entire nation. I mean, we will never forget the story of and the pictures that finally got released, Zapruder film showing the shot to the president. And, of course, Texas Governor Conley was in the vehicle with him as well. I'm looking at a piece that historian Steve Gillen wrote in part with Liz McNeil that was published. And it began talking about on November 22nd, 1963, as Jacqueline Kennedy flew back from Dallas on Air Force One, she sat next to her husband's coffin in the back of the plane. She said she wanted to be with Jack the entire time, her hand on the casket. That's according to the historian Steve Gillen. If you've seen the Parkland shooting story or hospital story, forget the exact title, it's very clear that some of the Secret Service agents are trying to figure out, what are we going to do? We can't. We don't put the president's body in a cargo bay, and so they were busy ripping seats out of this plane, Air Force One at that time, as what did exist, so they could make room for the coffin. It would be in the cabin. And then Larry O'Brien, who was one of the president's closest advisors, was sitting in shock, drinking whiskey, and another aide. They were reminiscing about the president's recent visit to the grave of his newborn son, Patrick, who had died just 2 months earlier of respiratory distress syndrome. Many might have forgotten that part of it. And then Gillen, who became the host of the new History Channel podcast 24 hours after the JFK assassination, said that Jackie quietly mentioned she wanted Patrick to be buried next to the president at Arlington Cemetery. She said, "I will bring them together." Normally that would not be allowed, but it was important for her to bring them together to a final resting point. And according to Gillen, when Kennedy's advisors did board Air Force One, they were surprised to see Vice President Johnson already on board. Johnson believed the Air Force One had better communications equipment, which it didn't. He also said he wasn't leaving without Jackie, and Jackie wasn't leaving without Jack, so everybody was at a standstill. And they say that when Jackie entered the presidential suite, LBJ is there. She wants to just wash some of the blood off her face. LBJ apologizes, quickly scurries out of the room. They actually had another dress laid out for her to put on. She refused to do it. And then in that stifling hot plane cabin, with members of the staff sobbing and Jackie standing in a bloodstained suit next to LBJ, and, of course, they took the oath of office to become president, to replace the slain president at the time. Years later, Gillen says he was teaching the president's son, JFK Jr., at Brown University, and they became friends. And he said, John once said something to me that I think about to this day. He said, "Bobby knew everything. He said it in such a way that Bobby knew things that no one else did." And hours after the assassination, Bobby did jump into action, protect his brother, ordering JFK files to be immediately secured. that Hoover was known to keep secret files on every major politician. So they secured all the material in the White House, and that Lyndon Johnson would not have access to any information that could be damaging to his brother. He said, looking back, it's a day of incredible drama, historic importance. Two people never lost focus on what was best for the nation, Lyndon Johnson and Jackie Kennedy. Interesting point here about those files, how they were secured, put away, with the call for the files on Trump. I'm not trying to make any allegation or statement. I'm just saying, look at the history 59 years ago as to the, how they're going to protect and hold files back as to where we are today. But certainly grieve and remember a president who was slain. And remember our pledge. One nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.